Hello, boys and girls. Welcome in to the Boys and Girl Podcast with Cowboys NFL Network reporter Jane Slater and NFL Network producer Bobby Belt. A Cowboys community with the inside scoop on the Dallas Cowboys. Now, coming straight to you from the Lone Star State, here's Jane and Bobby.
Eli is a, you know, probably soon-to-be Hall of Fame player, and, you know, him won Super Bowl. So, I mean, you can't just sit here and say Eli's a bad player, but, you know, age does catch up to us. And, you know, I guess it catched up to him. They got another one. They got another little Manny, so it'll be good for him.
Oh, the shade, Bobby. 4 days away from the Cowboys' second contest against the Giants this season, and Cowboys defensive end DeMarcus Lawrence giving the locker room a little bulletin board material there in New York. Daniel Jones, or as DeMarcus Lawrence calls him, Little Eli, a new wrinkle for the Cowboys, now 8 weeks removed from their season opener and that win against them here in Dallas.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, we just talked on the Wednesday episode. You recall we were saying that some guys need the... They need that, you know, energy for themselves. They need the push. So sometimes it's almost like I think that DeMarcus Lawrence is trying to stoke the fires. Like, it's like they're not giving me anything, so let me throw something out and kind of stir it up. But DeMarcus Lawrence, he's generally not needed a whole lot of motivation against the Giants. He's picked up 4 sacks now in his last 5 games against the Giants. It was actually just a half a sack in the opener, but he's picked up a sack in 4 of the last 5 games. And that was after struggling a little bit to start his career against the Giants. But certainly, no doubt, looking forward to bringing Daniel Jones to the ground for the first time. But as he said, you know, with Michael Bennett added now and Robert Quinn, we played that clip earlier this week, somebody's going to have to beat him to the quarterback.
And DeMarcus Lawrence already made himself a villain of sorts when he refused to sign that Giants kids jersey, if
you
remember that.
Which was such a phony thing.
Which, of course, he later explained was not meant to hurt the kids' feelings. You know, he simply wasn't going to sign a rival's jersey, which I get. But he took it a step further, Bobby, when he told us about his trip to the city during the bye week. You've got to hear this.
Went to New York, went through Central Park, went through Manhattan, did a little shopping.
Did you run into any Giants fans while you were in New York?
No, I don't know. I don't know if it was because of the weather or what, but I ain't see too many Giant fans. But I did see a lot of Cowboy fans, and salute to all my New York Cowboy fans out there.
And weather not going to be an issue up there in East Rutherford, at least for the Cowboys. They are dodging a bullet of sorts. I remember being there for that season finale last year.
Mm-hmm.
So cold, Bobby. But up there on Monday Night Football, it's going to be 42 degrees. Winds light and variable. We're talking only 5 miles per hour and mostly clear.
Which, how often is it you think that it's ever been said that, hey, it's October and you know, we're here in Dallas and we really should head up to New York for the warmer weather? Because that's what it is right now. It was in the shade. It was windy. It was cold today. I mean, it's the middle of the day here. The Cowboys are out here practicing on a Thursday. It's a Wednesday for them because they time shift their schedule a little bit with the Monday Night Football game. But they're outside practicing on a Wednesday like normal, but then they were also practicing on Tuesday, and both days outside were colder and windier than they're going to experience against the Giants on Monday Night Football, it sounds like. So they should be more than prepared for the elements up there next week. And I got to say, some of them really liked it. It was, I think it was Jordan Lewis actually on Tuesday who jogged out there and like loudly said, I love this. He's like, it's like Indiana weather. It's beautiful. And so they love it.
And it's got to feel like home of sorts for a guy like Michael Bennett, who we talked about earlier this week. Of course, he was traded during the bye week, joins DeMarcus Lawrence here on the defensive line. And, you know, we once again tried to catch up with him. He walked through the locker room. He was in the building.
He was.
But he had his headphones on and didn't want to talk to us. Now, well, I don't know if that, Bobby, was the sense of him needing to be in the meeting rooms and get acclimated and get up to speed on things. You know, the good news was, you know, everyone we've talked to says that he understands his defense.
Yeah.
He knows his playbook, obviously, because he worked with a guy like Chris Richard. He's a smart player. He's a veteran player. So it doesn't sound like he's had any trouble, you know, getting used to the system here.
Yeah, I don't think he has any issues getting up to speed. Actually, we can play a quick clip right here, actually, of Jason Garrett who talked about him getting acclimated to things and how prepared he's going to be come Monday night.
He's played a lot of football in this league. He's playing a lot of different spots. He's comfortable with our scheme. You know, so much of it is just terminology and so much of it is nuance. So I do think he's comfortable playing both inside and outside, and we'll give him a chance as we go. He did a good job in practice the other day. Excited to see him out there today.
Now, an interesting tweet from my colleague Tom Pelissero at the NFL Network today talking about Michael Bennett's contract and how it was restructured as part of this trade. Pelissero reporting that he is set to be a free agent in March. Bennett can earn close to $2 million in base salary and active roster bonuses for the rest of 2019, plus $750,000 in incentives, the last year of the old deal deleted. Bennett already made over $5.6 million this year from the Patriots, who paid him a $4 million signing bonus when they upgraded his contract after acquiring him from the Eagles. Now he gets back to the table yet again in March.
Yeah, and the Cowboys were going to be on the hook for $7 million. But, you know, we talked to Doug Hendrickson on Wednesday's episode, and he said there when we said, you know, he's got the extra year next year on the contract. Could this be raised long term? And he slowed down. He said, well, you know, when you get to this point in your career, everything's kind of year to year. I think he probably knew what was coming. But, you know, also what he was referring to there was it was $7 million that he was going to be owed, and none of it was guaranteed. So it's really doubtful the Cowboys were even going to roll into next year with him having $7 million on the books that they could just completely wipe away. Even if things went well, you'd probably suspect that they were going to try and get a bit of a pay cut out of him. Not really, I guess, a surprise that this eventually does get done. A little bit surprising that it happened so quickly. But, you know, that means, I guess, that lines of communication between Bennett and the Cowboys and his team, everybody seems to be communicating nicely that they're able to knock this done. You know, Michael Bennett's had his contract situation worked out before Dak Prescott even has. So Dak's been waiting around for forever to get that worked out.
Well, it sounds like he's going to continue to do some waiting until he comes to the table, if you listen to Stephen Jones and that group, because as I told you on Wednesday's podcast, there was no discussion during the bye week. But again, I've gotten no indication that this thing isn't going to get done. And look, if Dak continues to will his team back the way that he has, even when they've had these setbacks, and continues to show that he's a leader in the locker room and continues to do things off the field, you know, his price tag's going to keep going up. It's going to help his bargaining power.
I loved this, and this was actually Ari.
But then you run the risk of if you lose the way you did during some of that stretch.
Yeah, exactly. Now this was actually kind of a funny story from inside the locker room today. Is that, you know, they generally open the locker room at 1:30. It was open a little bit earlier today, about 1:15, which means they had wrapped up on the field a little bit earlier, and was open till about 2. And so when we were in there, we were waiting around for Michael Bennett and other people. And the whole time we were in there, we saw everybody kind of come in and out, or they were lifting weights. Dak wasn't anywhere to be seen in the locker. Not totally unusual, not his day to talk. But right before the locker closes, he comes in to just go to his locker. And when he walks in, he is drenched in sweat. His sweats are like, they just look like he's been, you know, he jumped in a pool or something almost with his sweats on. And Ari Temkin from 105.3 The Fan, who's actually the pre and post game host for the Dallas Cowboys Radio Network, he like looked at me and he said, like, you know, man, it'd be nice if the quarterback over there would just work a little bit harder, you know. But I mean, that's Dak Prescott. You know, everybody else already in there kind of wrapping up. You know, we obviously didn't get a chance to see what he was doing, but obviously Dak Prescott was off somewhere for that entire hour putting in all the work. And that's part of the reason why he's the leader that he is and that this team gravitates towards him the way that they do.
And there was this feeling in the locker room I got, at least talking to Travis Frederick, Zach Martin, guys like that, that bye week helped.
Oh, yeah.
So did the win ahead of the bye week. So I feel like mentally they're in the right space. Health-wise, we saw everyone out at practice this week with the exception of Cameron Fleming,
yep,
who gives them some depth on their offensive line. But those extra days of rest sort of helped get some of those guys that were really banged up and such warriors, the way that Tyron Smith and Zach Martin play through some of their injuries, the time that they needed in order to get themselves ready for this second half of the schedule, which you and I have talked about, is where things get a little dicey.
Yeah, things are going to be really tough for them. I mean, they've got a lot of strong football teams, winning football teams coming in, and, you know, they're going to have to be healthy for that. So this definitely came at the right time for them to recharge and kind of restore things for themselves a little bit.
Ahead of this one, health doesn't look to be an issue for the Cowboys, but how about the Giants to preview this one? Let's welcome in a man who has spent almost 3 decades on the beat.
Paul Schwartz. He covers the Giants for the New York Post, and Paul is one of my absolute favorite writers across the country. You can follow him on Twitter at NYPost_Schwartz. Paul, how are you doing?
Great. I'm one of your favorite writers, huh?
Absolutely. No, I enjoy your stuff a great deal. You got to have one good beat writer for all the opposing teams that you latch on to, and Paul's that guy in New York. Paul, I got to actually lead off here. So you've been on the beat. What was your first year, 94?
Yes, 94.
So now, since you've been on it since 94, I got to know. I went and looked this up. I remember asking this a couple years ago, and I think you aced it, but I want to update it now. The Giants are up to 9 quarterbacks since you've been covering the team. So can you name all 9 quarterbacks you've covered who have started a game for the Giants?
This will be impressive.
The Giants, let's see. Let's see. It's easy because for, 15 years, it was only one of them. So Dave Brown.
Yes.
Kent Graham.
You got it.
Danny Cannell.
Yes.
Kurt Warner.
Yes.
Eli Manning.
You got it.
Jumpin' Geno Smith.
That's 6 out of 9.
6 out of 9. Daniel Jones.
That's 7.
All right, now let's see. Who am I forgetting?
Between Danny Cannell and Kurt Warner, 2 guys.
Both of them could be construed as girls' names.
But one of them was hardly a girl. He was quite the ladies' man because he was on The Bachelor.
Oh, of course, Jesse Palmer, yes. He started three games. Yeah, boy, that was... the best thing of Jesse Palmer, he came in when, and of course, Kerry Collins.
There you go. That's all 9.
Kerry Collins. Yes. I remember when Kerry Collins was hurt.
I was about to give you a Jason Garrett hit there.
The heck with it. Just, rest your ankle. And Jesse Palmer came in, and this was right after The Bachelor. And he was a great guy. He was not a great quarterback. And, he would give us little Bachelor secrets every once in a while. And some things he couldn't tell, some things he could. And after one game, they got destroyed. And we said, how was it, Jesse? And he said, I had a blast. that was basically Jesse Palmer's NFL career. He had a blast, and he got on The Bachelor. And now, everyone knew he was a good-looking guy who'd be a good guy on TV. And that's exactly what he is.
Correlated into quite a career so far.
He did. And in fact, one of those 3 starts he made, it may have been the first one, actually, that was the clincher for the Cowboys, the NFC East, Bill Parcells' first year here. They beat Jesse Palmer and the Giants at Texas Stadium.
Fun fact, she won't get on any other pod.
So Paul, I'm curious, when you look at this Giants team and where they're at right now, there was, of course, that awkward transition where they tried to move on from Eli Manning in 2017. Geno started a game, and then it was awkward again, came back. Eli started all of 2018. Has this been a smoother transition for them, and does everybody seem to be kind of fully behind the Daniel Jones train right now?
Oh yeah, it was not smooth in a sense that they had Eli here, they had Daniel Jones here, and they gave every intention of saying we're going to give Eli every chance here. We want to win this year with Eli, and so I was surprised that after 2 games they pulled the plug. I mean, that was the only thing that kind of blindsided me a little bit. Is really 2 games? I mean, this was Pat Shurmur, I think, kind of was looking for a way out here. And think of it, once you restart with a rookie quarterback, everything changes, right? Expectations change. He's a rookie. He's going to have growing pains. Now it's about getting Daniel Jones ready to play. Where 2 games when the season started, when the Giants went to Dallas for the first game, it was the Giants are going to try to put together some kind of a run, some kind of contending for a playoff spot with Eli Manning, with Daniel Jones waiting in the wings. And in 2 games after that, gone. And Eli actually played well in the Cowboy game.
Yeah, he did.
He was fine. He was fine. Their defense was atrocious. He was fine. The next game, he did not play well, and that was it. But yes, I think the same Giants fans who, when Daniel Jones' name was announced at number 6, were horrified and could not believe that Dave Gettleman did that. After a few games and seeing Daniel Jones, seeing the way he comports himself, and he's a big, strong guy with a good arm. They're behind him, but look, it's growing pains, and this team won 3 games 2 years ago and 5 games last year. So with the growing pains, there's been a lot of losing, and that's tough to take.
Paul, I love New York media because every time I think Dallas Cowboys media blows things out of proportion, New York is just a whole nother level. And DeMarcus Lawrence, the Cowboys defensive end, made the comments this week comparing Daniel Jones to Eli Manning with the condescending little Manning. A little surprised I didn't see that splash across the headlines there in New York, but are there any comparisons and where are they different?
Oh my gosh, are there comparisons? Holy cow. I mean, They're both 6'5". Eli Manning is 218 pounds. Daniel Jones is 220 pounds. Okay, they both were coached by David Cutcliffe, right? They both have this drawl, sort of. Eli from New Orleans and Daniel Jones from Charlotte, North Carolina. Now, Daniel Jones is a much better athlete, runs better. Eli Manning is the famous Manning family, but they're very similar. They're pocket passers, even though Daniel can move much better, as I said. And it's funny. If you close your eyes, sometimes when Daniel Jones is speaking, it sounds like a Saturday Night Live skit of someone trying to be Eli Manning. His inflection is a lot like Eli's. He is kind of blandly nice like Eli. You know, he says stuff, but he's really not saying anything. He even says less now than Eli said as a rookie. Eli was a little more polished. Daniel Jones can say more, but he doesn't. So they're very similar temperament, and I think that's what the Giants wanted. That's one of the things that attracted. This is what they think. You know, they don't want Baker Mayfield playing quarterback to the Giants. You know, they don't want a guy who's going to be up and down and hot and cold, even if he's going to be really good. They want a guy who's steady as she goes. They think that's what you need to be a New York franchise quarterback. So there are incredible comparisons. It will be fascinating as Daniel Jones's career goes on and on here, and Eli after this year fades out of the picture, you know, where they are similar and where they diverge. But right now, very similar.
You know, you were talking, if you close your eyes, they sort of sound like one another. I'm going to really mess it up for you. I put out a side-by-side comparison of Eli, Tony Romo, and Daniel Jones. And Daniel Jones truly looks like a morphed version. If Eli and Tony had a baby, it would be Daniel Jones.
Well, see, now that's a disturbing thought that I'm not going to get out of my head, number one. Here's another thing. The Giants rookies, every year, something very nice. They dress up for Halloween and they go to a children's hospital, you know, all in costume, all the rookies. So they, it is so, if you look on Twitter, you'll see, I think I tweeted something on it. The Daniel Jones picked I think they picked it for him. It was the perfect costume. Woody from Toy Story. He looks more like Woody
The
cartoon than Tom Hanks does in the cartoon. I mean, the face, the shape of the face. I mean, and it's interesting that he's Woody, who is what? A cowboy.
Right.
Playing the Cowboys. So maybe this Jason Garrett can use that as bulletin board material.
We certainly could. Yeah, there's not enough of that. I got to say, though, we mentioned that, you know, you've covered these nine quarterbacks during the time, and you compared Eli and Daniel Jones in terms of how they're not always going to give you, like, you know, a bulletin board quote. They're going to be the safe quote that the front office can trust. I am a little curious, and I don't know how much you would have spoken with them, but of course Jason Garrett was there for 4 years as the backup while you were covering the Giants, and that's kind of the thing we always say about him, is that he's always going to be kind of the vanilla quote and the safe quote. I'm just curious, when Jason Garrett was there in the building as a player, what were your impressions of him? Was he that type of a guy? Did you always think, you know, that's a guy who's going to be a future head coach one day?
Well, I thought either he would be a future coach or he'd be a future, captain of industry. You know, he was going to be a future something because he's really smart. He can speak. You knew that he knew more than he said, always. You know, he would give you stuff and you knew he knew more. He would kind of wink at you. And I think he still does that as a coach, doesn't he? Around, you know, he kind of like, this is what I'm going to say. I know more. And I can say more, but I'm not going to. I find Jason as a visiting writer. You know, when he talks to us, he's pretty good. Now I know he's can fill up a notebook and not say a whole lot. I get that. But I think he gets it. And as a player, he was, you know, he was the backup. He was a New Jersey guy. You know, his father had been a coach in the area, in the New York area, Columbia. So very good to talk to. But, you know, he would take you out on that limb, but he'd never go over. You know, he knew his place as the backup. But he was the great backup quarterback as far as you'd go to him for insight, information, as opposed to Eli now, who is just doesn't talk to us now because he's the backup. He doesn't want to play that game. The best Eli ever had was David Carr, who was tremendous. He was a tremendous resource as a backup quarterback, as a former first-round pick. He would analyze the game for you and analyze the players. He was great, but he also didn't go too far because, look, these guys are backups for a reason. But Jay, I have very good memories of Jason as the backup with the Giants. He was just what you wanted a backup.
We've got someone like you that has such a wealth of information. I have to throw this one out there to you. You know, there's, I think he's quieted at least the discussion that we were having 2 weeks ago here in Dallas, 3 weeks ago, about Jason Garrett being on the hot seat once again, a conversation we have once a year here in Dallas. But there was that argument out there that if Jerry Jones comes to him at the end of the season and he's all of a sudden a free agent, that no other teams are going to call. And I've argued that there are a handful of teams they're going to call Jason for some of the reasons that you mentioned earlier. Do you think the Giants would be one of those in the future?
You know, I've thought of that, and you know, I'm going to hedge a little bit, because first of all, I think I know that the Mara family, the Tisch family, they have hold Jason Garrett in high regard. You know, even though he's with the Cowboys now, you get a sense he always speaks incredibly respectfully about the Giants, about Eli Manning, about his time with the Giants. So, you know, even though he's with a rival now, there's no burnt bridges at all. I think he would be a hard sell, because what has he done as a head coach? You know what I mean? I mean, all the reasons why he would be leaving Dallas if you know, they get an Urban Meyer or something like that. You know, he's a guy who went 8-8 a lot, you know, beat the Giants a decent amount, had some marginal playoff success. So I think he would be a hard sell. Now, his record is much better than, say, Pat Shurmur's, who had two very losing years with the Browns before coming to the Giants and had a very losing year last year as well. I think he would be someone whose name I would certainly float and try to do some research on. But I can tell you this, that I don't think he would be – I know for a fact he would not be a slam dunk among the fan base, because they would say he's a good guy. But we never feared him as the Cowboy coach, so why would we fear – you know, why would we really want him as the Giants coach?
In regards to this game coming up now this week, just here in the last few minutes that we have with you, you mentioned Eli didn't have any problem moving the ball. Evan Engram was a handful for the Cowboys the first week. You've got Saquon Barkley back healthy now. Daniel Jones seemingly hitting his stride. Golden Tate's going to be back. Looks like Sterling Shepard's going to be back. So the offense seems to have everything in place. They've made the move for Leonard Williams, who was absolutely rocked Dak a few times a couple weeks ago against the Jets. So they have added that to the defense. Is this defense, do you think, better equipped to slow down the Cowboys offense than they were in the first week, when it looked like they were pretty much lost against that Cowboys passing game?
Well, I would say yes, because slow down, I mean, this was the Autobahn in that first game, right? I mean, there was no speed limit in the first game. So I think on Monday night there will be a speed limit. Unfortunately for the Giants, the speed limit might be 70, you know. It's not going to be unlimited. Yes, they had no idea what they were doing in the first game. It was DeAndre Baker, the rookie from Georgia, first-round pick, his first game. He was not ready, pure and simple. They gave up big play after big play. It was, you know, I mean, Gallup had a monster game. Cooper had a monster game. You know, it was a free-for-all. And they've done better, but there are still breakdowns. The Lions exploited them in some deep passing with Matt Stafford last week. That was troubling. So the defense will be better. I don't know if it's, you know, I think they could hold them in the, you know, the high 20s, maybe the mid 20s, something like that. They're not going to stop them. They think Leonard Williams will help. I mean, I don't think he's going to play 70 snaps in this game, Leonard Williams, but they think he can help against the run. You know, they're a defense that basically leaks happen in their defense whenever they can't happen. You know what I mean? If they're stopping the run, they give up a big play in the passing game. If they're doing a good job in a passing game, what happens is what happens against the Cardinals, where Chase Edmonds runs like he looks like Ezekiel Elliott in that game. So they really haven't got it together yet. But I will say, as you mentioned on offense, this will be the first game when Sterling Shepard, Golden Tate, Saquon Barkley, and Evan Engram are on the field at the same time. They're all going to play. I'm 99.9% sure Sterling Shepard will be taken out of the concussion protocol. You know, they were just waiting, you know, for a certain time frame before they would release him, because it was a second concussion. So this will be more weapons that Daniel Jones has ever had. Those guys have never played together. Saquon's coming back from the high ankle sprain. He looked better last week. So they should be able to score points, because, and if they can't, shame on them, because all their weapons are there. You know, all season they've been saying, we're waiting for Golden Tate to come off suspension. Then Evan Engram hurts his knee. And then Sterling Shepard misses all this time. Then Saquon misses three games. So they're all back. The offensive line is there. You know, this is their offense that they envisioned when they let Odell Beckham Jr. go. This is it. Their offensive linemen are all healthy. So this is their team. And if they can't move the ball and score even a little bit with little Eli Manning at quarterback, then there's a problem.
So, you know, it wasn't that long ago that the narrative was Dak Prescott can't beat the Giants. That was the big thing everybody said his rookie year. We're now on seven straight games that Dak and the Cowboys have been able to top the New York Giants. So I guess I'll ask you as we wrap up here, just quick prediction. You don't have to give me a score, but do you think that streak snaps or do the Cowboys extend it to eight?
No, I think they extend it. I'm actually picking the Giants to with 7 points. But so I think it could, you know, probably will be a close game. I would not bet a lot of money on that. I would bet your money on it, but not my money on it. But how about this? I'll bet the money that I'm getting paid for this podcast.
There we go. Oh, that's a hefty appearance fee. That return's that's going to be a sizable return, Paul.
On the Giants covering, okay? That's how sure I am of this. So I think they can keep it close. I think they're kind of, I sense that maybe the Giants are coming together a little bit, but look, coming together and beating the Cowboys are two different things. So, sure. You know, that's where I'll leave.
Well, Paul Schwartz, he covers the Giants for the New York Post, has done so for 26 seasons now. And like I said, he is one of the absolute best beat writers in the country. You should check his stuff out, especially if you have an interest in what the other teams in the division are doing. You can follow him on Twitter at @NYPost_Schwartz. Paul, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
All right. Anytime.
Well, other intriguing storylines this week that we addressed on Wednesday, Jamal Adams. Ian Rappaport and I reported that the Jets wanted a 1 and 2 twos for him, a price tag that was way too high for a team who has now developed a reputation of sticking to their draft, Bobby, and avoiding these pricey free agents. My sources told me that while they were comfortable with offering a 1 and a 3rd-day pick, the sense given was that some of the ask during these talks was that the Jets didn't really want to part with Adams. Adams pretty fired up when he was asked about that on Wednesday.
You know, I woke up Monday morning, and, you know, I kind of found out through couple of reliable people that I have a lot of trust in that I was being, you know, shopped around. You know, at the end of the day, I know he has a job to do and I respect it. But, you know, I hold myself in a high regard. I've done everything, you know, they've asked me to do since I've been here for the 3 years. You know, I didn't take that lightly. I really didn't. But you know, when I heard that I got the call, that my agent called me and he told me what was going on, you know, it definitely hurt me. You know what I mean? I hold myself at a high level. You know, the Rams don't take calls on Aaron Donald. The Patriots don't take calls on Tom Brady. You know what I mean? That's where I hold myself in that regard. So, regardless of, I understand that you have a job to do. That's the way I took it. You know, RC, he contacted me. And, you know, obviously when I found out that I was being shot and that, you know, I was on the verge of being traded, you know, that was one of the teams that I told him I would love to go to. And it was to go to the Dallas Cowboys. People got to understand, man, I'm born and raised in Dallas. I find out everything, every little thing you can think of. Michael Irvin is like my uncle. I find out everything. So, you know, everybody's coming at me in certain ways to say I'm a liar about a lot of things or I'm not believing in something. That's not true. You know, I'm always shoot you straight. I'm never going to sugarcoat anything. But like I said, man, I told RC that, you know, that was definitely a spot that I would love to land.
Kim Jones, my colleague at the NFL Network, covers a number of teams, among them the Jets and Giants. And you can also hear her on WFAN in New York City. Thanks for joining Bobby and I. Kim, you were there at the presser. What did you make of this whole thing with Jamal Adams?
Well, I mean, Jamal Adams, it was pretty remarkable. He's 24 years old. He's a really good player in this league, one of the better safeties in this league for sure. The Jets, I think, have won 10 games with him. So the argument of, you know, any player is expendable is one that's used in this market a lot, and I understand it for the most part. I do think Jamal plays a really important role for the Jets as an emotional leader and a guy who really, you know, cares a great deal on the field. So it wasn't surprising to me. He was emotional. At one point he did say, you know, the Patriots don't take calls on Brady. The Rams don't take calls on Aaron Donald. And at that moment you knew that would be really big. And it was. What Jamal then intimated, though, was that's how he values himself. And you know, I think that the Jane, you and Bobby, I'm sure know, NFL players have to value themselves that way. They get their butts kicked half the times they're on the field. I mean, they can't go into games thinking, well, I'm one of the, you know, 86 better players in the league today. I mean, a lot of them think very highly of themselves. And I think a lot of times they have to. So nothing from Jamal yesterday surprised me. Including the emotion, including some of the statements he made. That's who he is. And a lot of times the Jets really like that part of him. He is their guy. He is their leader.
And I did think it was interesting, Kim, even in talking to my sources here, I mean, they were sort of going back and forth. And as Ian and I had reported this week, they ended up asking for a 1 and 2 twos. And my source said at the end of the day, because of all the negotiations and the things that they wanted, for Jamal Adams, they truly got the sense that they never actually really wanted to part with him. So I thought that was sort of interesting, even as he talked about, you know, you don't pick up the phone for guys like that. It sort of felt like they wanted to see if they could literally get the kitchen sink for him, and then they ultimately didn't. So,
yeah, and you can't blame a new GM in Joe Douglas for doing that, Jane. There's been, you know, there have been rough years here with the New York Jets. They have a roster that is in desperate need of help at premium positions. They need offensive tackles. They need offensive linemen overall, but they need tackles. They need cornerbacks. They need pass rushers. So you're talking about really big ticket items that if a safety helps you deliver those, you obviously have to think about it. But like you said, maybe it was a matter of fishing to see what they could get. I don't know what the offseason will bring in terms of Jamal Adams' future with the Jets. But, you know, for now, I do think the organization made a decent statement in not, in wanting that kind of compensation. And my hunch is, as these days go on, Jamal will realize that too.
Well, and you mentioned there, Kim, that, you know, we'll see what the offseason brings and how this plays out. Jamal did say afterwards that Joe Douglas had offered to meet with him and talk about things, and he said he wasn't ready for it. And so, you know, is this something where it's just a young player kind of emotional, having his feelings hurt, for lack of a better word, and this will eventually get worked out? Or do you think this is on the path to come this spring, he's on his way out of New York?
Oh, I mean, I think it could be all of the above. I asked Jamal yesterday, are your feelings hurt? And to his credit, he said yes. So he admitted that was part of this. I didn't love the idea he's not ready to meet with them. Listen, I've done knucklehead things a million times more than Jamal Adams in my life because I'm a lot older than Jamal Adams. So I tend to be very forgiving about stuff that really isn't a huge deal. And this to me does not raise to the level of huge deal in life or in football, to be honest with you. So I think that cooler heads, you know, will prevail as they almost always do. They will eventually talk. But if you're the New York Jets and you have all of those needs that I already mentioned, and you also have in the same draft class as Jamal, a second round safety in Marcus May, who has had trouble staying on the field with health issues, but is also a highly rated by PFF safety in this league. If you have to start deciding where your money is allocated, you know, do you maybe keep Marcus May and get assets for Jamal, because that's what brings you the biggest haul to really rebuild this roster? But again, that's down the road.
Well, Kim, we just had Paul Schwartz on from the Post on the show, and like him, you've been in this market, and man, the NFL Network is keeping you busy this year covering both the Jets and the Giants. Let's shift over the Giants, who the Cowboys face on Monday Night Football. What do you make of this team now led by the young rookie Daniel Jones?
Yeah, I think, listen, numbers-wise, he's performing better than Eli. You know, we saw the best of Eli, and now we've seen essentially the end of Eli. I think Daniel Jones, popular among teammates, he won them over with the way he practiced and prepared and his ball placement and accuracy and all of that good stuff in team drills back in May. When they started to get on the field after he was drafted, of course, in April. I think Daniel Jones is impressive. I do think the turnovers are an issue. They were not a huge issue in Detroit. He had the one that went for a touchdown, but then cleaned it up and threw for, what, 4 touchdown passes. So he ended up having a decent day against the Lions. It was in a losing effort. You know, I think there's a lot to like with Daniel Jones. I don't know. I think the Giants do believe they found their franchise quarterback. And other than turnovers, although that's a big other than, I think he's been very good, and I think he's handled what could have been an awkward and difficult situation with the benching of Eli very, very well.
The Cowboys, of course, had that big victory over the Giants in week one, and that was kind of Kellen Moore's coming out party for the national discussion. Is this a game you think now with Daniel Jones in place and the new acquisition of Leonard Williams, is this a Giants team better equipped to potentially beat the Cowboys in this game this week than they were the first week they played them?
It may be. It may be. They have Golden Tate now as well. He had a PED suspension, so he missed the first 4 weeks. So this, you know, Sterling Shepard is expected to be returned from concussion protocol, which he's in for the second time this season, by Monday. Saquon, of course, is back and healthy from the ankle. So, yeah, I mean, they'll be as fully healthy as they can be on offense, and they may be better equipped. The Leonard Williams thing is going to be a fascinating comparison in this market because we saw what he did with the Jets. The Giants now believe he'll help the pass rush. He has yet to have a sack this season. He has put pressure on passers, though, and he is a good player. So that's going to be fascinating sort of from the Jets-Giants perspective to me, almost as much as, you know, Cowboys-Giants, to be honest with you. But, yeah, I mean, I think you will see this offense as good as it gets for now on Monday night.
Kimberly Jones, always a wealth of information. I know you are busy this week with this upcoming game and, of course, all the stuff going on with the Jets. You can follow her on Twitter at Kim Jones Sports. Thanks so much for joining us on our podcast.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
You know, it's interesting. We talk about Jamal Adams there and Kim so good covering both teams. But, you know, when we reference back to that Jamal Adams topic, I was talking to somebody that was who's pretty connected to Adams' circle and knows him pretty well and is involved with his line of thinking a little bit and understands where he's at. And, you know, the sense was kind of what Jamal Adams had said already, that once he was hearing that his name might be in trade talks, he was excited about the idea that, well, maybe it could be Dallas because obviously he wants to come home and play here. I think at this point, even though, as Kim said, it's a little unpredictable where this is going. It very well could get to a point this spring where it all falls apart. That was the sense from the guy that I talked to, was that it felt like that Jamal was going to just kind of run out the clock this season, not mail it in, was going to be fully committed to things, but then, you know, kind of revisit what he felt was like a bruised relationship in the spring. And so from there, the only thing is that Dallas clearly being of interest to him. You remember when we had this issue where Earl Thomas was so public about his affinity for Dallas and wanting to be here and, you know, Jason, come get me and things like that, that it got to a point where people were reporting that the Seahawks are willing to trade Earl Thomas. The price is high, but it's even higher for the Cowboys than it is for anybody else because of the bind sort of that Earl put them in with the Cowboys directly. Apparently that's the one thing that his inner circle, his team's a little concerned about now, Jamal Adams, is that if things aren't better by spring and if he is moved, you know, before free agency around the time of the draft, that the concern might be a little bit that Dallas won't be a realistic option because of the position that Jamal's then put the Jets in with his affinity for Dallas himself, that the Jets will say, okay, we're going to have to move on from him. Maybe our price has lowered a little bit, but it has not lowered for the Dallas Cowboys. If the Dallas Cowboys want him so bad, if he wants the Dallas Cowboys so bad, they are going to pay that premium price.
Well, and that's a problem again with Earl Thomas. The money that he wanted when they were going to have to redo that deal, they were going to have to give up something and then redo a contract. And keep in mind, they've got guys that they still need to pay on this team, namely your most important guy, Dak Prescott.
That quarterback. That's the most important place. And again, that's a spot where safety is not one that they've shown a lot of zeal to go out and spend big resources on. And they've had,
or with draft picks.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about this again on our Wednesday podcast. Every safety that we thought was a possibility for the Cowboys, and we genuinely believe they were going to address a position of need that we had talked about all offseason last year, they went and got Tristan Hill, a guy who, by the way, we found out this week,
he fell asleep during a speech given by Basketball Hall of Famer Isaiah Thomas, and that came out after the reports had broken on Thursday that Antoine Woods and Tristan Hill were sent home from practice on Tuesday for being late to meetings. And so,
Jason Garrett cracking the whip.
He is.
Still has a hold of this team, still the disciplinarian. And I respected the way Antoine Woods handled that in the locker room, talking about that he's hardly ever tardy going back to college, that he respected the decision And he addressed the media. One of our favorites, too, here. To be completely transparent, one of my absolute favorite Cowboy players in that locker room.
And he had some fun with us, too, though, because, like, he was, as soon as the reporters walked up to him, he's like, no, not today, you traitors. Yeah, no. He's like, man, I interact with y'all on Twitter, and here, y'all aren't getting anything anymore. He was playing. He then sat down and talked to everybody for a few minutes.
But Tristan Hill did not.
And Tristan Hill, in general, hasn't done a lot of talking with the media this year. Not that he's somebody that's commanded a lot of media attention because he hasn't been out there.
And here's where he's got to be careful, Bobby. I'm not saying you've got to suck up to the media. Look, like the stuff with Baker Mayfield, and people are so frustrated with the way that he's handled the situation. I'm not telling you how you have to handle the media, but I will tell you that if you have a good relationship with the media, you tend to get some passes from time to time.
Taco Charlton did not have a good relationship.
And that is why he didn't get a lot of passes here in Dallas.
I got to imagine he's also a little, you got to think maybe a little frustrated that, you know, now with this Michael Bennett acquisition, that probably limits even more the opportunities that he might be able to have inside.
And they could have addressed the safety position.
They could have several times, and they didn't. Actually, that's a good time for us to transition over a little bit because we got a couple questions on Twitter. This one from Antonio. He said, why do you think Dallas didn't have interest in upgrading the safety position in the draft, second round, he put in parentheses, but instead was willing to trade multiple picks? I think that, okay, so it's a little different. You're talking about a guy who's the back end of the second round. When you like another guy there in Tristan Hill, and it's, you know, in comparison to a guy who is an established star at the safety position and can make a lot of plays for you. But I mean, in the end, you can say, why were they interested in that, but not in that? In the end, they haven't pulled the trigger on any of them. And so what is the real interest level?
And the Cowboys, to be fair, if you look at all of their first round picks and even what they've been hitting on in the second rounds in the last couple of years, have done a good job of developing talent through the draft, as seen by all the guys that they've been forced to re-sign in the last couple of years. So there is this sense around here that they can develop the guys they believe in. And keep in mind, Rod Marinelli was a huge fan of Tristan Hill. Remember, it was Tristan Hill's birthday.
Yep.
They sat in the lobby of that hotel. They went over the scheme. There were some questions about him in college. Rod wasn't afraid of that. We've seen Rod handle some of these trickier players in the past. Some have worked out. Some haven't. You know, maybe it's a maturity thing. Maybe he comes around. Taco Charlton stepping up for Miami, though.
Hey, well, and I'm going to – you can go to my Twitter account and see that. He does have 4 sacks. I think it is worth pointing out. That's why you can't box score scout. Just look at the video I posted. There's some cheapy sacks is all I'm going to say. We can finish here, actually. We'll wrap things up here with a little bit of fun. We're recording this, of course, on Halloween. And this will air on Friday, but we're recording this on Halloween. And so Shelby George on Twitter asks us, power rank your top 5 Halloween candies. So quickly, just off the top of your head, what are some of your favorite Halloween candies?
Nestle Crunch.
Okay, that's a good one.
Kit Kat.
That's way up at the top for me. I think that may be number one.
Starburst.
Which color, though?
Pink, obviously.
Pink. I like the pink. See, and I used to be like pink was the one that I loved. I really like just like taking two, like one pink and one red, and like eating them together. That's really good.
They should do a combo. Do they have one?
They do. So like my kids have been getting they've been going to a bunch of fall festivals, and they've been getting a bunch of these little mini Starburst things. So instead of handing them a whole sleeve, you get like a little 2-pack wrapper. And when you open that up, there's like usually either two of the same kind or a mix. And so, yeah, they've are delivering them in little 2-1s, and so you can kind of like eat them together. And so I do like the red and pink mix. It's good. But I got to say, as I've grown older, as I've matured, I appreciate the lemon and the orange a little bit more than I used to. But
look at you opening your mind up. And one of the pickiest eaters that I know.
It's really distressing how much I am a picky eater. In fact, true story, the very first date I went on with my wife before we got married, started going out, the first date I slipped up and went into detail about all the things I won't eat. And she told me later, she was like, yeah, I really was thinking like, okay, this isn't going to work out. Because that was within like 20 minutes. Now we're married.
That's how I felt
so
about you when you came on board
jokes
as my
on her.
Producer.
Yeah, exactly. No. Oh, my gosh. When she found out I didn't like, was it avocados or guac? One of those. When I didn't.
I mean,
like,
there's a laundry list.
But there was one that like really
eat.
Like it was personal. Like she felt it. Like I saw the disappointment on Jane's face when I said it. But Halloween candies, I have terrible children that they don't like chocolate. And so Halloween's always kind of a sad time for me because they're always like go to like raid their buckets and they've always like It's like, oh gosh, Laffy Taffy and like Smarties, like what are my kids doing? So I'm definitely more of a chocolate person. So Kit Kats way up there, Snickers, the bite-sized ones are really good. And then, yeah, I think that, you know, you got the Nestle Crunch. That's pretty good. Hershey's Kisses, M&M's, the little M&M's packets. Those are all good. I like all of it. But
where do you stand on candy corn?
I like candy corn.
Ugh, see?
It's
amazing you and I work together.
And I know all the fruit. No, that's exactly it. It's you know,
opposites attract.
Yeah, it's just a nice blending. We cover each other's, you know, I'm here to stand for candy corn since you won't. That's, I'm really feeding that demo for the podcast right now.
We'll see how the analytics shake out on that one, Bobby.
I may be hurting us more than helping us.
Well, we do appreciate the fan engagement. The response has been awesome so far. And we, of course, appreciate our guests popping on. We've got some fun ones coming up in the next couple of weeks without giving too much away. Very excited about what we've got coming up here in the month of November.
Absolutely. It's going to be a lot of fun here on the podcast and a lot of fun for the Cowboys right now because this is a critical stretch. This is going to be a crucial time for the Cowboys to see, is this a team that's going to slip below 500 or are they going to take control of the division and establish themselves as a real NFC contender?
Thanks for tuning in for another one. We'll see you for the next.
Salute to all my New York Cowboy fans out there.